Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Arr, matey. 'Tis the 19th day of September, Anno Domini 2020, and ye scurvy dogs, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. The biggest piece of news, of course, is that today is indeed Steve Ray's birthday. Happy birthday to you. And Dave, a day early, happy birthday to you. Yeah. And Dave, a day early, happy birthday, dear Steve. And Dave, a day early, happy birthday to you. And Dave, a day early.
I really hate that Talk Like a Pirate Day is on my birthday.
Yes, Talk Like a Pirate.
Arg!
It is Talk Like a Pirate. You know where pirate speech comes from, that kind of talking? It comes from one guy.
In a movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
His name was Robert Newton. He did three movies. He did Treasure Island, Long John Silver, and something else. Oh, Blackbeard the Pirate in the early 50s. And he was from the West Country, and he knew that some pirates came from the West Country. So he used that accent, and that's where we get all of it. That's where we get scurvy. I mean, it's where we get everything we think about pirates was from those three films. And that one guy.
Well, a lot of the pirates were actually British privateers. They had a license from the king to stop the other countries, Spain and Portugal and France.
Right.
And so they probably were British accents.
Well, exactly. They talked a lot more like Cary Elwes than Robert Newton. So,
yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. That's just the way that works.
That was then.
And this
is now.
This is now.
You might need those.
Yeah,
anything happened in the news this week?
Nothing interesting. Yeah. I want to start with what was my favorite story, and since I'm the one who compiles the news.
You get to tell it the way you want.
I get to do it. NVIDIA, which is best known as a major player in graphics processing, announced on Monday that it had locked down a deal to purchase UK-based chip licensing giant Arm Limited for $40 billion with a B, dollars. Arm... here's an interesting thing. ARM stands for Acorn Risk Manufacturing.
Yep.
ARM does not manufacture silicon. Instead, it designs processors, and it then licenses those designs for others to customize or not before fabricators crank out chips from silicon wafers. ARM's impact has been massive. Primarily, you know, it's the company you never heard of, and you have a dozen of their chips.
Yep.
At least. They're made for mobile chips.
Member supported.
Oops. No, that's me. Sorry.
Okay. I thought
just because
I turned that off.
That was me. Just because my iPad is muted doesn't mean the TV is muted.
ARM's impact has been massive, primarily because it's made for mobile chips, have powered virtually every smartphone since Apple's 2007 introduction of its iPhone. The chips are also at the heart or brain of everything from tablets to Internet of Things devices such as sensors and controllers. So they are everywhere. Earlier this year, Apple committed to transitioning its Mac personal computer line from processors provided by Intel to designs of its own spun off from licenses from ARM. The first such Macs are set to debut before year's end. The sale of ARM to NVIDIA will give other chip makers pause, but it may have an impact on Apple as well. Apple is an ARM licensee, but will they want to play with NVIDIA once it owns ARM? Apple didn't play well with Intel, after all. Apple may have valid concerns about NVIDIA-owned ARM, actually, because licensees are worried that their proprietary use of ARM intellectual property might somehow be compromised or used by NVIDIA. Apple might wonder whether its IP is secure with ARM as well an arm of NVIDIA.
Yeah.
Apple is also concerned about their corporate secrets, and rightly so.
Yeah.
One reason Arm has been so attractive to Apple and other technology companies is that Arm's business model has been customer neutral. Because Arm does not make its own chips, it could not compete directly with, say, Apple Silicon or force Apple to buy chips from Arm rather than outsourcing the fabrication. Apple wants to be in control of its own destiny. NVIDIA said it isn't about to make any changes to Arm. As part of NVIDIA, Arm will continue to operate its open licensing model while maintaining the global customer neutrality that has been the foundation of its success, the company asserted in a statement. Elsewhere, NVIDIA's CEO, Jensen Huang, told Bloomberg that the money his company is spending on Arm, he has no incentive to disrupt current relationships with customers. That may well be true over the short term, say the next 2 or 3 or even 5 years, but no one, perhaps not even NVIDIA, knows how Arm might take on a different strategy beyond that time frame. Companies almost invariably make a no-change pledge when they acquire another firm, promising, for example, to keep the current leadership team in place or declaring it does not envision layoffs among the acquisition's workforce. Those promises are often kept until they aren't. The deal is not guaranteed, of course, for it still has to earn approval from regulatory agencies from a number of countries and organizations, including the U.S., the U.K., the European Union, and the People's Republic of China. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is NVIDIA wants to buy Arm, and your choices are, that's great, that's horrible for Apple, won't mean much for a while, couldn't care less, and no idea what that means, and of course, other. So far, we have, that's interesting, I don't know where that came from. Okay, so far, we have 35 votes. That's great, is almost half of the votes, and no idea what that means is a second. But I know you'll have more to say about this because, well, you're you. So if you head on over to our forums, and that's at soundbites.org, again, bites with a Y, scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussions is 19 Sept 20, NVIDIA wants to buy Arm. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And if you promise to be both articulate and give us enough information, you can use our text line at 585-205-8887. But first, we'll talk a little bit about this this Arm business. This has got to be surprising for Apple.
Yeah. Well, one of the things Apple has done is that they take Arm's reference designs and customize the heck out of it.
Right.
And that's one of the ways they've been able to get so much performance out of their A-series chips in their phones, and how much faster they run than many comparable chips in the Android market. Virtually every mobile device is powered by an Arm-based processor, both iPhone and Android.
Right.
Tablets and phones and smart devices and
yeah,
everything.
Pretty much anything you can pick up.
Yeah, anything not a main computer.
Right.
And even some of the main computers have Arm. Yeah.
Right. And more will as time goes on.
Yeah.
But if in fact, everybody's already got a relationship with NVIDIA because NVIDIA makes the graphics chips
yeah.
that power so many machines.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get it. It in one sense, it doesn't much matter because they're really going to have, it's a continuation of an existing relationship. So I get that. But it's still a completely different relationship
mm-hmm.
because now, particularly for somebody like Apple, what's the investment they just made in that Arm reference
yeah.
thing? And now suddenly the company that provides that reference system is no longer the company that it was. You know? It's owned by someone who's not really a rival. NVIDIA doesn't make computers. But they could certainly start. I mean, they could now design their own phone
mm-hmm.
with an NVIDIA graphics chip on top of an Arm processor. They could create Chromebooks.
Yep.
Yeah.
That would be easy.
Bloomberg is reporting that Apple was sort of in the running to buy Arm
yeah.
itself and decided not to.
Yeah.
But what was interesting was it was owned by SoftBank. which is a weird company to own a technology.
SoftBank started as a holding company for software. They were a soft bank.
Yeah.
So you used to be able to, in the early 80s, you used to be able to buy games mostly that were published by SoftBank. Then they started a magazine, and then they became basically just a holding company for other companies. But they're hurting too, and so now it's...
a lot of places.
It's ARM. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of places are hurting.
According to Wikipedia, they have over $100 billion in capital. So now they've got 40% more.
Yeah.
A $40 billion deal.
Yep. And it's just early days, of course. But I think that, again, in the short run, nothing is going to change. Because they said it wouldn't. And they at least have to pay lip service to that. But B... it takes a while to decide what to do with a brand new company.
Yeah.
I mean, first you buy it and then you figure out.
Sorting out just the, right, what direction do they want to go now, given the market.
Right.
And what is going to actually get them money.
Right.
Because otherwise, you know, you can start, have a great idea, but if people aren't going to buy it and everything else, just because you had it. An idea, or also your resources as far as getting those supplies in to do this product. And that's a big concern. Like right now, even Chromebooks, they're having trouble. There's hundreds of back orders right now for Chromebooks on some places because they can't get the parts in.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot to consider, like you say, when you start something.
The
like
real
that.
Loser in this whole deal is Intel.
Yeah, yes.
There's really a smack upside their head because NVIDIA, with their graphics chips and their even the CPUs that they've been running now, or what they call them, an APU, as a competition against Intel chips and computers, ARM was the other major competition against Intel chips. Now NVIDIA is going to have both of those. It's going to be some really serious competition to Intel.
Yep. We'll see what happens, but it's... I think we're looking at a long game here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's way more Game of Thrones than it is a 2-hour movie. And I think we're going to find that in the end,
NVIDIA's, your favorite character is going to die on the third page.
Always, always. But yeah, it does make sense to me. This pairing of NVIDIA and ARM.
Yeah.
In the long run, in the short run, I don't really see it making a difference. But in a few years, we should. I'd love to see a high-end ARM-based, NVIDIA-based Chromebook.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
And this is a pretty good deal for SoftBank, who bought ARM in 2016 for only $32 billion.
Right.
So 4 years later, they made $8 billion.
Right.
That's a heck of a deal.
Right. And almost doubled their valuation.
Yeah.
Yeah, but how much did they have to put in to get that $8 billion, though?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it always sounds great. Well, they made $8 billion, and they bought it for this. Well, in between that time, how much capital and everything else, when you cut through the cheese and everything else, how much is really there?
Right. No, I agree with you. But still, on paper.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Yeah.
And do the employees get any of that?
No.
Yeah.
Don't be silly. SoftBank. I don't even know what employees there are at SoftBank. They don't do a magazine anymore.
Well, no, at ARM.
Oh, at ARM. Yeah. No, none of them are going to get a penny. Well, I suppose if they have stock options.
Yeah.
Their stock went up.
It's all going to be about the stockholders anyways.
Right.
So that's the only thing that really drives a lot of it.
Right. That's why NVIDIA bought them.
Mm-hmm.
It increases their portfolio and increases their stock. So.
Yeah.
We'll see. And we had some text messages.
Yeah, we've got one in. Are you ready for this one?
No.
It's a long one. And this is from Bob C. from Rush. I upgraded to a new Windows computer, and now I am revisiting malware and virus protection. I installed Super Anti-Spyware and Malwarebytes. Then I uninstalled McAfee's using Revo Pro and installed my license AVG. AVG is now telling me I should run in a passive mode because it doesn't like malware bytes. Do I really need malware bytes with a full blown version of AVG Pro? Am I over medicating?
Okay, what passive mode means is that AVG still gets updated. It still gets all its virus definitions, and the program are all updated. And you can use all that to manually scan your PC, but it does not actively protect you. Really, these days, so many programs overlap in what they do. I would say my go ahead.
I'll say AVG for the virus protection and Malwarebytes for the malware protection.
Right. I would personally, I would run AVG and not Malwarebytes daily. I mean, run it in the background, keep it running all the time. And then I would run Malwarebytes when I think there might be a problem. That would be my personal preference. But your mileage may vary.
Yeah. Because there's always that concern that, that one company can't find everything.
Right.
And that's shown true in shootouts all the time, where one company won't find it, but another company will. Give them a day or two to update their definitions, and they will too. But in that meantime, it's nice to be able to rely on two separate databases.
And honestly, I think the range of things that AVG does,
Albuquerque.
Nice. I think the range of things that AVG does is wider than what Malwarebytes does.
Mm-hmm.
Also, AVG is lighter, so if you worry about your virus protection slowing your system down, AVG will do that less than Malwarebytes.
I've had several people recently that have installed AVG. Now, there's a piece of AVG called their secure VPN service. They start getting all these warnings about, your IP address is exposed. You should buy our VPN service. Yes, your IP address is exposed because you're on the internet. It has to be exposed.
Exactly.
So the warnings.
Well, a lot of folks don't realize that, though. You know, it's a good way to scam a lot of folks. They go, oh, dear. You know, and if they talk it up, you know this guy.
Yep.
You know, depending on the salesperson.
And there's a big misunderstanding about what a VPN does. It makes you safe on the internet. No, it doesn't. It hides your origin on the internet.
And that's all it does.
That's pretty much all it does.
Right.
So
and it only hides your origin.
From your ISP.
From your ISP.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Who already knows where you are.
Yeah. Because they're taking you to the VPN company.
Right.
So they know where you are, and they know you went to a VPN company. So.
Right. And a VPN, if it is an internal VPN to a company, is a brilliant thing.
Yep.
Because it means that from outside the company, like you're working from home now, if you VPN into that company, you are essentially on their network and in a secure tunnel, so that if, you know, you can get at all the resources because mm-hmm. you're on the network at work.
As if you were sitting in at that computer at work.
Exactly. Yep. And it is protected because it's tunneled in. And you don't care if your work knows your IP address because it's work.
Yeah, they better know it.
Remember when you had to lease an ISDN line?
Oh, yes.
How expensive that was?
Oh, yes, I do. And how fast it was compared to dial-up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although it actually was dial-up. But
yeah, that's a whole other story.
Who invented VPN? Let's see.
I don't know.
Does
but
Wikipedia know?
It does. It's great if it's inside a company. But these standard off-the-shelf VPN companies do a lot less to protect you than you might think. But they do.
Since most websites are encrypted now anyway. It used to be if you were at like a coffee shop, the other people in the coffee shop couldn't sniff your traffic.
That's what a VPN did.
Right. But now all the websites are encrypted anyway.
Right.
So they can't anyway.
Right. Now the only thing a VPN does is say that they don't know that somebody went to Google.com.
Right.
Big flipping deal.
BFD?
Yeah, it's BFD.
The way things work, you do something bad. So a lot of people use VPNs so they can steal music and movies because they think it hides them on the internet. Well, yeah, as we mentioned, it hides you from your ISP. So when the movie company says to the ISP, you know, who is this person? Well, they went to a VPN. All right, then they go to the VPN company. Who is this person?
Right, yeah. And there are very few VPN companies who will protect you from the federal government.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Sean from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hiya, Sean. What's up?
Hey, guys. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Can you hear us?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
I called you about a month ago about a recommendation for a new computer.
Yeah.
and you guys recommended going to Dell, so I went to Dell and I built a computer, and I just wanted to follow up.
Oh, excellent.
So I picked an Alienware with an Intel Core i7, and the reason I went with the Alienware is because all the XSP memory was a lower speed. The Alienware had the 3200 speed memory.
Right. Alienware is really a game caliber.
Yeah, gamer.
It's
yeah.
for gaming, and so most of the components will be much faster.
High performance.
Yeah.
Right. And my only goal here was to be able to edit GoPro videos, which I haven't really been able to shoot because I haven't been out a whole lot.
Right.
All dressed up, no place to go now.
What, you don't have a lot of GoPro video of your walls? Come on,
well,
Sean.
Yeah, I could.
Shoot out the windows.
So how did it go? How do you like that Alienware?
It's great. It boots up instantly. I can log on to everything. It's no problem. I really appreciate
it. Did you get the cool glowing case and the flashy lights on it?
The neon, yeah.
Yeah.
The SSD, the hard drives. Did you get the SSDs?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a 512 SSD and then a 2 terabyte spinning drive.
Yep. Perfect. Perfect.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm sure if you really want to test it out, you could ship it here to Rochester. And between the three of us, we could give you an honest opinion of what we think about it.
It'll take a while.
Yeah.
Quite a while.
That's just to go to Nick. Then it'll come to me.
Yeah. And then it'll go to Steve. Who mostly, because he uses a Mac, will just stare at the flashy lights.
I'll figure out a way to Hackintosh it.
But you're really liking it, though?
Yeah, it's great. You guys made a good recommendation.
Good.
Well, we're pleased that you're enjoying it. Thank you, Sean. And remember, your job is to tell everybody in New Mexico about Soundbites.
I gotcha. I will.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for keeping us up to date.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Thanks.
Call in more often.
All right.
Yep.
Yeah, Alienware was a separate company, and they focused on gaming machines. So they were very high-end.
You might pay $5,000 for the video card.
Exactly. they were Apple caliber and higher, in point of fact.
Yep.
And then they were bought by Dell, who really didn't change them that much.
Yeah, we were worried because Dell was known for cheap, not fast.
Right. And now the Alienware... is still a very high-end and very expensive, but very worth it for certain applications. If you're doing video editing and you're not using a Mac and et cetera, Alienware is an exceptionally good way to go. Or if you're a very high-end gamer, which is what Alienware was originally designed for.
Yeah. And video editing is one of those things where you need all the horsepower you can get.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, Apple sells they have a custom accelerator card for $1,000. To specifically accelerate Final Cut video editing.
Nice. And that makes sense because you need that sort of thing. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. This is the longest running computer show in the known universe. That means it's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you because it is your support. It keeps us on the air. We are solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have a text message from Will from Hampton, Virginia, and he wants to know if location.net is reliable. Can a company be located in India and still use a server here in the U.S.? Well, first, location.net does not exist. It is iplocation.net, and there are many services like it. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it tells you where your IP is. That's not where you are. That's where your IP is registered.
Which is almost always where you are.
Almost always, but not necessarily.
Yeah.
The question, can a company be located in India and still use a server here in the U.S.? Yes. For example, I use a company called Bluehost to do my hosting while all their servers are in the United States. But Bluehost doesn't care where I live. I can buy a server instance from them from anywhere in the world. So, yes, a company can be located in India and still use a server here in the United States. If you're using something like IPlocation.net to say, where is this server, that tells you nothing about the company, and it may not necessarily tell you anything about the server.
It is where the
trail leads when they go through the internet. But that trail, while it may end in a server in the United States, may then be forwarded somewhere else, hidden from you. So in fact, in that situation, although most people don't bother with that, frankly, but in that situation, you cannot rely on IPlocation.net to tell you anything.
Yeah, I joined my VPN at the office on my iPad here and then went back to there. Now it says I'm in Canandaigua, which is not quite true.
Right.
It's apparently where the ISP endpoint is.
Yes, exactly. And that's not where you are necessarily.
Right. And so, in fact, right on this page, hide my IP. It doesn't hide your IP. It changes the IP to a different one depending on where your endpoint is.
Nothing can hide your IP, because think about it.
Yeah.
If you hide your IP, how does the other end know where to send your stuff?
Yeah.
It's like shouting out there and not knowing where to send it back.
Right. It's like somebody saying, send me an email, but I'm not going to tell you my address. Or send me a letter, and I'm not going to tell you my address.
Yeah.
You have to know the address
so
the data can get to you.
Right. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hi, guys. Happy birthday to all who need a wishing happy birthday to.
Thank you.
While I was waiting, I have a question, and I'll get that in just a second. But while we were waiting to get picked up, we had a call come in. It's a whole new level of stupidity for scam calls.
Oh, yeah.
I'll share it with you because it's a good chuckle. Phone rings. I'm on my cell waiting for you guys. The house phone rings. Lenny answers it. It said it was a local number, which, of course, it wasn't. An Indian voice comes on, wants to know if it's me, and she said it was. And he said, well, we have our stuff shows that you have a there's been fraudulent attempts against your Internet account over the course of the last month or so. Have you given your password to anybody? She said, absolutely not. Oh, good. Well, we can get this resolved. If you'll give us your password, we'll take care of it for you.
Yep.
I told you you'd enjoy this. And my wife said, you're a scam. Now, there's an expletive that I deleted because this is family radio.
Yeah.
And then she hung up on them. But, yeah, she said, your friends on the radio are going to love this one.
No, it's a great one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're glad you didn't give your password to somebody else. Now we can steal all your money.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, something along those lines. So, anyhow, on to the question. I've finally decided to go for a new phone.
Uh-huh.
I've had this one. I've had my Stylo 2 for, I don't know, 4 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And the last month or so, we've been getting a little weird behavior here and there, nothing I haven't been able to recover from, but it was time to start looking. So I decided to go with a Stylo 6. $240 price tag, which is only $14 more, or $24 more than I paid for the Stylo 2 4 years ago. I looked it up. I compared it out to the Note. I like a stylus, so I compared it out to the Note phones and also the Pixel phones, because you guys had nice things to say about Pixel phones. The Stylo 6 is in the same size category. Their designers must have been listening to your show and listening to Uncle Dave, because it's just a little bit thicker, but it has a battery life or a battery rating in the, it's either 4,000 or 4,400 milliamps.
Yeah, very nice.
Which gives it a very long number of days in waiting status
life,
or whatever.
Yeah.
So I looked at that. The cameras aren't the highest end, but they're more than sufficient for what I use, and it still has the stylus. Can't remove the battery, but you can put in a memory card.
Right, so up to 2 terabytes.
Yes, which is really nice. my current 128 gigs only using 26 or 7 of it, so I figured I'm just going to move it over, and therein lies my question. I have my photos set to back up to Google.
Yep.
Photos. So they're on the card in the phone and up in Google Photos. If I take that card out of the old phone and put it in the new phone and set it to back up, when it goes to sync, is it going to recognize the fact that those pictures are already up in Google, or is it going to duplicate them all because it's now a new device?
Very good question. Because it's stylo to stylo.
Yeah, and it's the same Google account.
Yeah, same
it's
Google
the same
account.
Google account. It theoretically should not.
Yeah, because it's just like, say you lost your phone, you know, and you get a new phone, you know, you sign in, and it because everything is residing up there in the cloud. So it already, you know, it's not going to sit there and...
yeah, but what he's saying is he's already got all these pictures on the
out.
Phone.
Yeah. Never mind.
Yeah, and
I'm
so...
I'm migrating the card over to the new phone.
Yeah, the card.
Right. My concern is it's going to see a new device and then try and do it, and then just going to duplicate.
That could, Andy. That very well could. I mean, because it's going to think it's another new device.
But it's the same account. So the trick is it's going to see an empty card and an empty library and a full library. It should be smart enough not to sync the empty library to the full, right? It should sync the full to the empty.
Right.
Could you sit there and set it, though, so it doesn't...
Well, on the new phone.
On the new phone. No, can't you stop the sync? You could tell it not to sync the card. You might be able, in the setup, not sync the card up to Google. You might want to do the phone part as far as emails and all that stuff. But when you put the card in last, get everything else set up. And put the card in last before you get everything pretty much all set up. You know, your Google, you know, email accounts and programs and everything else. And then put the card in, whether it's that day or the next day, and then see if it's going to try to sync it up. Because you might be able to say, yeah, no, don't do it now. But I got a feeling it's going to want to.
Look,
it should be smart enough not to duplicate.
Yeah. Google.
The names of the files should be the same because I'm just moving code. I'm not copying it.
Right.
The dates on the files and the size of the files and the names of files shouldn't change.
Right. Okay. And Google does try to avoid duplicates.
Okay.
But is it going to with a different date?
Well, the date shouldn't be different either because the card... I'm not making any changes.
No, the day you're uploading it, though, and trying to sync it. I'm not sure.
See, it shouldn't know it's a different device. You're just syncing your files again. Because it all goes by the account name. I wouldn't think there'd be a device identifier in there at all.
No, I don't think it cares about that. Because I can upload stuff from many different devices, and it doesn't duplicate them.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, okay.
So theoretically, it shouldn't.
All right.
But it'd be interesting to know if it does.
Well, I've saved them all in whatever the standard resolution that Google has is, and I haven't, so I'm using almost no space at all because it saves them as a Google file. So,
or you know what might be easier, though, Andy? What might be handier is take that flash drive or that memory card and just copy it all over to another flash drive. And then
just to be safe.
Yeah, and then wipe that SD card out. You know, reformat it. So that's also fresh. Because you'll have the file. You've already got the photos up on Google Photo. If you put them over to another flash drive or another hard drive, you know, that you can offline storage, you've got double protection. That way you're starting out with a fresh phone with nothing even on the card. And go forward from there.
And if you really want some of those pictures local, you can then download them from Google Photos to the phone.
Yep.
They will be not only synced, but also identified as that photo, so they won't duplicate.
Yep.
Okay. Well, because I have a spare SD, micro SD card, it's 512.
Well, you can store it on your desktop as well. I mean, you can put the pictures anywhere you want.
What I'm thinking, though, is what you're saying is format the card I've got. Rather than do that, I can keep the card I've got and just put in the new 512 in the new phone.
Yeah.
And then, because it now gives me double the memory. It's just I have little folders set up for different things in my life, and that's where I put the pictures, and I got all the pictures of the grandkids and everything, so I don't have to.
Or just go get another little SD card.
Well, that's what he's saying. He's got
it. Yeah, there's
one. I've got one that's double the size of the one I currently
have. Oh, there you go.
Well, there you go. Use that one. That's perfect.
You'll be all dressed up and ready to go.
Yeah, no place to go.
Yeah.
these days.
Yeah. Okie doke.
All right, you've given me a lot of, as usual, you've given me much food for thought.
Thank you.
And we'll see if we can munch on it here and figure out what we're going to do.
Perfect.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye. Yeah,
bye-bye.
I just realized I forgot to disconnect from my VPN.
Oops.
All right, here we go. Windows. Researchers have developed and published a proof-of-concept exploit for a recently patched Windows vulnerability.
Oh, don't even.
Yeah, that can now access an organization's crown jewels, the Active Directory domain controllers that act as an all-powerful gatekeeper for all machines connected to a network. CVE 2020-1472, as the vulnerability is tracked, carries a critical severity rating from Microsoft as well as the maximum 10 under the Common Vulnerability Scoring System. Exploits require that an attacker already have a foothold inside a targeted network, either as an unprivileged insider or through the compromise of a connected device, but that's sadly ridiculously easy these days. Such post-compromise exploits have become increasingly valuable to attackers pushing ransomware or espionage spyware. Tricking employees to click on malicious links and attachments in emails is relatively easy. Using those compromised computers to pivot to more valuable resources can be much harder. It can sometimes take weeks or months to escalate low-level privileges to those needed to install malware or execute commands. Enter Zero Login, an exploit developed by researchers from security firm Secura. It allows attackers to instantly gain control of the Active Directory. From there, they will have free rein to do just about anything they want, from adding new computers to the network to infecting each one with malware of their choice. This attack has a huge impact. It basically allows any attacker on the local network, and they don't have to be in the local network. They could be outside and get into the local network to completely compromise the Windows domain. The attack is completely unauthenticated. The attacker does not need any user credentials at all. The Secura researchers who discovered the vulnerability and reported to Microsoft said they developed an exploit that works reliably, but given the risk, they aren't releasing it until they're confident Microsoft's patch has been widely distributed on vulnerable servers. The researchers, however, warned that it's not hard to use Microsoft's patch to work backwards and develop an exploit. Meanwhile, separate researchers from other security firms have published their own proof-of-concept attack code. And, of course, there's no guarantee that the only people who've ever discovered the exploit are the good guys. Zero Login works by sending a string of zeros in a series of messages that uses the NetLogon protocol, which Windows servers rely on for a variety of tasks, including allowing end users to log into a network. People with no authentication can use the exploit to gain domain administrative credentials as long as the attackers have the ability to establish TCP connections to a vulnerable domain controller. In a statement, Microsoft wrote, a security update was released in August 2020. Customers who apply the update or have automatic updates enabled will be protected. Administrators are understandably cautious about installing updates that affect network components as sensitive as domain controllers. In the case here, there may be more risk in not installing than installing sooner than one might like. Organizations with vulnerable servers should muster whatever resources they need to make sure this patch is installed sooner rather than later. How secure is your network? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Or, of course, you can text us at 585-205-8887. That's 3817.
And it was funny, last Saturday, no, not too funny, I had to go, you know, I wound up taking Windows 10. And rolling back to the beginning of September, because it messed up my machine so bad. It's like, oh, son of a pups. you know, using end users as beta testers.
Yep.
That's all we are is, you know, well, you know, you're not paying for any of this. Yeah, but it doesn't mean you have to brick my machine.
Right.
And I literally went back and rolled back to the beginning of September 5th. Had to go all the way back to September the 5th, and I turned off any updates.
Yep.
I said, yeah, don't try again until the end of September. And I got a reminder now to just keep going in there until I know it's safe to put some of these in that other people could go ahead and try doing it.
Right.
They're not going on my machine.
Yep. Right.
That was and so frustrating.
That becomes the problem is no one wants to load the patches because there's such a problem. But then the security holes are so huge, you have to load the patches. And just because you have to be connected to the network to exploit this patch doesn't mean anything. It's ridiculously easy to trick someone into clicking on an email. I went to a seminar once from a security company, and they do testing for your company. We'll send an email to all your employees. And try to trick them into clicking the link and, you know, something about here's a contest you win, fill out this survey and, you know, get a gift certificate. And lady calls up and says, where's my gift certificate? And says, well, ma'am, you know, that was a security test and you failed. We need to teach you how to not click on links in email. Well, no, it said I got a gift certificate. I want my gift certificate. No, ma'am, that was a lie to trick you into, I don't care. I want my gift certificate.
Right. But those are called tiger teams, the groups that legally and for good reasons break into people's computer systems.
Yep.
But in terms of Windows 10, I put this out in my newsletter last week with all the instructions, and I don't have them in my head right now. But you can legally download a copy of Windows 10 and keep it on your system in case you ever – not on that system, on it somewhere else, so that if you ever need to reinstall – you can, and it's perfectly legal to do because what counts is the license key,
right,
not the actual copy of Windows.
Yeah.
So you can download a copy, and in case an update completely borks your machine, assuming you've got good backups, et cetera, you can then run this copy of Windows 10. It downloads as an ISO, so you could burn it to CD if you wanted to, or you know, put it on a separate drive and then just install it from there. But one way or the other, you should have a separate copy of Windows 10 handy for your reinstall if you ever
need. Well, what gets me, though, is my Windows 10 machine upstairs, it doesn't go out to the internet.
Right.
It's mainly for my internet.
Right.
I don't have it go out there or that. The only thing that goes out onto the internet is my Chromebook. It's the only thing I trust. This Windows 10 box that I got to replace it, I use for internal use only.
Right.
And that's why I have right now, until I see different patches that I really need, yeah, no, I'm not going to do it. I don't need to.
Yeah.
Because it's running what I need it to do internally.
Right. One of the problems that crops up is when the Windows license is registered with Microsoft, it takes a snapshot of your hardware.
Right.
And then say your hard drive dies and you put a new hard drive in, they assume you've stolen it onto a second computer and you have to call Microsoft. I've done this for so many customers. You call Microsoft and then they let Windows reinstall. Then I tried to open Office. Oh, you only have one license. This is a different computer. No, it's the same. So you have to call the Office team to get that license fixed. And then the Adobe stuff has to. So these digital licenses are really annoying.
This is why I use Linux.
Yeah.
I can put it on every machine I own. I don't have to call anybody. I don't have to do anything. It just always works.
Yeah, the Apple App Store is like that. You can install it on any machine you own, and a lot of developers don't like that because they would like to sell you three copies for your three machines.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we do have a couple questions that came in, and the first one is when the photos are uploaded to Google, aren't they sorted by date? If they are, then all the duplicates would be in one place at the beginning, and he can erase them.
Well, it depends on what date they're sorted by.
Here are some results.
Looks like I triggered somebody's G word.
Yeah.
They can be sorted by the import date, or they can be sorted by the date in the picture in the EXIF data.
Right.
And that's not always the same.
By definition, by default, they're sorted by upload date.
Yeah.
But yeah, yes, you would see those new ones. But I think what he was actually worried about was them coming back down to his phone, and deleting them from the phone is much more of a pain in the patoot than it is doing it at a desktop.
Yeah. And like I said, just put in a fresh card and save that card off to the side. He's still got them.
Right.
And they're also up in Google Cloud, like you said. If he wants a particular photos that are his favorite, then download them from Google Photo to the phone, and all is good.
And you're done.
Yeah. You got it. And right. No duplicates.
Right.
So that's
that makes
easy.
Sense.
And then we have...
Because it's a pain to remove duplicates from your photo library, especially on your phone.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Another one is Mark from Greece. How secure is my network? I have a cable modem / router. LOL.
That's a very good question. Not as secure as you'd like it to be, probably. One thing you can do is you can go to grc.com. That's grc.com, Gibson Research Corporation. And one of the services they offer, you can see it at the top left of the page, there's a menu, and under services, the first one there is Shields Up. And what you can do is run Shields Up, and it will tell you how open your network is.
Right.
And in fact, in general, that's how open your router is.
One of the things that's a little annoying is it doesn't test all 65,000 ports at once.
Right.
Because that would take forever.
Right.
So by default, it tests the common ports first. But you still probably want to test all of them,
on
too.
On the other hand, yeah. Most exploits only test the common ports.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to take forever with each machine either.
Yeah. The other thing that can happen is your router firmware frequently needs to be updated.
Right.
And if you own your own router, you might be able to update it yourself.
Right.
If the company pushes out updates.
Right.
But with the cable router you own from the cable company, that you don't own from the cable company, they have to update it at their end. And so sometimes you can look at the brand and model of that router, check that company's website to see if there is an update and see if it's been loaded or not. But you have less control over putting those updates in.
Right.
Because there's a lot of updates, a lot of router vulnerabilities that get found that need to be updated as well.
Right. But yeah, I would certainly, a good place to start at least is it Shields Up.
And I would link to that, but it's a random URL every time for security purchases.
Right. So you go to grc.com.
That one I can link to.
Right. And select Shields Up from the services menu. All right. That music tells us you've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But ho ho, scurvy dogs, you've got a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, coming right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you. We are member supported, Jazz 90.1. We'll have a whole lot more of Dave Enright, a whole lot more of Steve Ray, and way too much of me, Nick Francesco. So take a slightly longer break, and then we'll come right back with a whole another hour of this show. If you're out and about, good for you. You should get out more, at least inside your car and in private these days. But we'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites in just a few minutes.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter, at 901JAZZ.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Before we go back to the phones, I want to remind everybody, it is not only Talk Like a Pirate Day, it is Steve Ray's birthday, and one day out from Dave Enright's birthday. So if you see either of them, spank them. That's really
at a socially distant.
It's from space. Socially distant. So use a paddle or a stick or something.
6-foot pole. I saw somebody joking about countries that use a metric system are still saying 6 feet distance.
Yeah.
Instead of 2 meters.
A lot of the British shows that I watch use feet and inches and things, too. And I thought they were all metric.
Well, except for beer, still sold by the pint. Because half a liter of beer just doesn't sound right.
Right, because it's only half a liter.
Yeah.
I'm getting chipped.
Who wants a half of anything?
Yeah, even though half a liter is about a pint.
Right, exactly. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Ernesto from Parenton, New York. Hi, Ernesto. What's up?
Hey, guys. Where do you get the license key on Windows 10 in the registry?
Well, that's a very good question. And the best place to get it is from the documentation that came with it.
Many new computers now use a digital license as part of the computer, and there's no printed license anymore.
Right. You may get a sticker.
Right. If you go into, is it Windows Settings About?
Yeah.
Somewhere buried down in there is your actual 25-digit license key.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, but you will need that. It's something that everybody out there listening who owns a Windows machine should find your license key and write it down securely somewhere. I keep mine in EnPass. My wife's. I wouldn't touch a Windows machine with your 6 foot pole. So, no, I do not use Windows, but my wife does, and so I keep her her license key in EnPass so that it is always available.
And save you a lot of grief and aggravation.
Oh, please believe me.
I know. Because if mama ain't happy,
ain't nobody happy. Anyway, Ernesto, that's where you find it.
So it's in Windows.
Yeah, I'm looking up to find an article on where to find it.
Yeah, we'll post something when we get it. But you go into your settings. So you hit the start button, then settings.
Yeah.
And then
about or system. It's in there.
It's system, in I think it's those. Under system.
But there was also out on the web. Utility.
Magic Jelly Bean Key Finder.
Yeah. Right. And, well, it was a key finder type of thing. And what it would do is it would list your keys that are registered just for that computer. And it would tell you both your Windows key, your Word key.
Your office key, Adobe key.
Any keys that publish themselves to your registry.
Yep. Right. And it is it's a free utility. It's from magicjellybean.com. Steve will put up a link to it.
Yep.
Take hit a screenshot of that and print it off. And like Nick said, save it in some spot, that's safe.
Yeah, magicjellybean.com/keyfinder. And, of course, that's all lowercase and no spaces.
Okay. Thanks a lot, guys.
Sure. And for everybody else, just so you know, Magical Jelly Bean Key Finder will find over 300 programs. It's over 10,000 recover keys.
It's a very useful tool.
It will scan a non-bootable Windows thing. So if you've got something installed on the D drive, say.
Mm-hmm.
It'll still be able to scan it. Does work with 64-bit systems. Mm-hmm. Even recovers Windows 7, 8, Office 2010. It does a lot of stuff.
And
so
the pro version can recover even more things.
Right, and there is a pro version. Yeah. And as we always say, if you like a product, please buy it. It keeps it
keeps the program going and expanding and gets more improvements.
And there's a version for the Mac as well. So it's a pretty good product. There is the pro version it does do more and does some pretty good stuff. And of course you can then take that and save it to a text file or to a CSV so you could open it up in Excel.
Save it up to the cloud.
Or save it up to the cloud.
Paste it into, you could more or less take a screenshot, paste it into a document, say in Google Docs. And then that way it's saved up onto the cloud for your future reference.
Right.
I've also used one from Nearsoft, N-I-R-Soft, Nearsoft, Nearsoft?
Yeah.
Nearsoft.
Nearsoft.
Nearsoft. They have one called Product Key Finder. They have a lot of cool things for digging into the registry and finding passwords you have forgotten. And every time I try to run that on somebody's computer, their antivirus pops up. Ooh, hacking tool. Ooh, hacking tool. Sort of, I guess, because I'm trying to recover their forgotten password.
Right. All right. Did we have somebody waiting on the phone?
No, we got, text. We did that.
We got a text, right.
We got two text questions now. I already gave you the one, and you want me to read it again?
Yes, please.
Okay. Question. How do you protect your Wi-Fi security cameras from jamming devices? I have a good long password and protection. No default security is used on the network. I am knowledgeable and recently built my own computer system with 15 processors and a 4 terabyte hard drive space and up-to-date technology. Thank you, Soundbites, for your thoughts and advice.
Well, that's very nice. All right, so here's the deal. A jammer is something strictly that will block your Wi-Fi signal. It doesn't prevent your systems from working. It doesn't break into your systems. It just prevents any Wi-Fi device from connecting to your network.
It overwhelms the radio, so it can't receive your Wi-Fi signal because there's so much noise.
Right. So there's nothing you can do to protect against that unless you live in a Faraday cage. So you cannot, in fact, protect against jammers. If what you're actually asking is how do you protect someone from breaking into your network through your Wi-Fi cameras, that depends entirely on what Wi-Fi camera you're using.
Right.
Many of them are what we call IoT devices, Internet of Things. Everything has an ARM processor in it now. And many of the companies that put those out have absolutely no security on them. None whatsoever. So many of them are a way to get into the network through that device. A lot of cameras, Ring had that problem for the longest time. They were completely without any sort of security.
Even though they are one of the better companies that releases updates, someone found a hole.
Someone found a hole.
But it got updated, which is good.
Right. So they started out with no security whatsoever. Then they added security. Now they're patching the holes in that security.
Yeah.
Depending on where you get your Wi-Fi cameras, you need to check with the company that makes them to see if there are updates and how well they're protected. But in terms of jammers, there's nothing you can do to protect against them because they are simply a super powerful radio signal. Dave knows this problem well from the ham radio community.
Yep.
You can get some idiot who puts up a super high powered antenna and rig and blows everybody else out of the water.
Just key it up.
There's nothing you can do to stop that.
Right. They have to literally triangulate them and try to find them, and then
right, the FCC will take them down if they're up long enough.
Yeah,
but sometimes they could be across in another country.
Right.
I mean, you get some folks up there, you know, that could be over down in South America or in Mexico, and they throw up, you know, power supply that's putting over, say, 2K,
right,
and it just slams that channel down.
I remember when I was a kid, would visit my grandparents in Florida, I could listen to a 50,000-watt radio station here in Rochester.
Yes.
While I was in, because they played CBS Radio Mystery Theater at night.
Yes, they did.
When I was supposed to be sleeping.
Yes.
Yeah.
I used to listen to that.
But the only
one that started with the train noise? One of the channels played stuff like CBS Mystery Theater at night. They played The Shadow. They played all kinds of things. And the thing started with a train.
I downloaded all of those from the Internet Archive. Just my show. But
welcome.
Yeah.
Those were mine.
Really? Yeah. Nice. Yeah, the only real solution to protect your Wi-Fi cameras is don't use Wi-Fi. Run Ethernet, then it can't be jammed with a radio signal.
Right.
Speaking of Ring, though, I got scared. Yeah, it was just last week. You know, because I'm not used to these Ring cameras and all that.
Yeah.
I'm going to drop a kid off.
Yeah.
So I go up to the door, I knock on the door. And I'm waiting. Nobody's coming to the door. And then all of a sudden I hear, yeah, we're only about 2 minutes away. Just sit tight. We'll be there in a couple of minutes. And I'm looking around. Where the hell did that voice come from?
Well, that's
they had the Ring security cameras. He pulled it up on his phone. He goes, yeah, see, once he got there, he says, yeah, I saw you had the Ring.
Especially since it catches you, if your door is angled right, it catches you coming into the driveway.
Right.
Yeah.
That's making its way into police shows now, too, where people are getting caught on doorbell cameras, or now the bad guys are sneaking around the edge of the house so they can obscure the doorbell camera.
Right.
In fact, there was one the other day. Not many new cops would have seen that. You know?
Right. But in terms of a Wi-Fi camera, you can't protect it from a jammer.
Right.
Wi-Fi is so convenient, but Ethernet is so much better. You know?
Yeah.
We got another question. This is Mark from Greece. Yes, it's a Spectrum modem / router. At GRC, I didn't pass. I had to enable WAN blocking in the modem / router settings. Now all the ports are true stealth.
Yeah,
there you go.
A lot of routers have manage on LAN or manage on WAN, something like that, which means that they can be managed when you're not at home.
Right.
It also means the bad guys can attempt to break in when you are home.
And don't, you know, I mean, these folks leave the password to the default password. You know, if you're really that worried about it, folks, take the time and effort, read a little bit. Yep. There's plenty of YouTube videos, and go in there and create safe passwords. Secure ones.
Yep. The reality is that every single bad guy knows every single default password.
It does make my
change them all.
It does make my job a lot easier most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even, you know, yesterday I had to look up a default password and it worked.
Randall Monroe of XKCD once said we need a national holiday to honor all those generous souls who have a default Netgear router.
Yep.
With no security.
Yeah. Linksys was the big one forever, too.
Right.
Well, that used to be.
They did say Linksys.
The biggest joke. You could go around with a laptop and sit in most driveways and hack into the network. Because like you say, you see.
I was having the worst time with one of my Roku boxes. And it was just getting a horrible signal over and over and over again. And I couldn't figure out what it was until I realized that it had linked to a neighbor's Wi-Fi, which was unprotected.
Yep.
and they are on not green light, we'll just say.
Okay.
And so I fixed that. Quite quickly.
You should always leave yourself an open Wi-Fi network for plausible deniability.
Yeah.
I have an open network. It wasn't me that went to that site.
Yeah, right. you want to protect your network. You want to make sure that...
There was an episode of Security Now. They were talking about a password study. Somebody's master's thesis, probably. They studied the 8 billion leaked passwords that have been collected together, and they found there were a surprising number of random-looking passwords that fit a pattern.
Oh, yes.
And the one conclusion they came to is that there's some bad password generator out there that doesn't have enough entropy or has a bad algorithm, and it's generating a 12-character password with 3 uppercase letters, 4 lowercase letters, and then 5 uppercase letters.
Yeah.
So there's a pattern to its generation. It's not random enough.
Right.
They don't know who's doing that, but
I actually have a text file with 100,000 unique passwords in it. And that's only a good start.
Yeah.
Sadly,
any password you want to think of, check it against the leaked password list.
Right. Yeah. And you can find those online as well. All right, so this is a great news story. When buying a new Chromebook, one thing we should all now be trained to look out for is its expiration date, or the date after which you no longer receive updates, the AUE, Automatic Update Expiration. It seems Google has found a clever potential solution to make the end of OS updates less of a death sentence for your Chromebook by separating the browser updates from the Chrome OS updates. Every 6 weeks or so, Google releases an update for Chrome, which we typically install for its fun and exciting new features. Even if you don't care about the features, though, it's important to keep Chrome up to date so that you have the latest security updates to keep your computer and information safe while browsing. In point of fact, you don't have to do anything to update a Chromebook. It updates in the background, then you shut it down. Next time you turn it up, you get the new stuff. Even on older Chrome desktops and Android phones, it's easy to update Chrome, the browser, to keep the browser secure. However, on Chromebooks, the version of the browser is directly tied to the OS getting updates. This means once your Chromebook reaches its update expiration date, your browser will slowly become more vulnerable. Thankfully, this may be about to change. Google has been working for a few months on a new project for Chrome, codenamed LaCrosse, LACROS. One of the motivations for LaCrosse seems to be to take that it makes Chrome for Chrome OS, Chrome the browser for Chrome the operating system, more like Chrome for other systems, where they ship a binary for that OS built like they want, independent of the tool chain of the operating system itself. Google appears to be trying to separate Chrome OS system updates, which bring cool new features like virtual desks and quick answers, from browser updates by including a separate installation of Chrome that can be independently updated. LaCrosse is surfaced in a working state on Chrome OS Canary, which is the beta channel most of us avoid like the plague, although we're not avoiding the plague much these days, by enabling a flag in Chrome :// flags, a new LaCrosse app will appear in your app list on Canary only. If you're not in Canary, you can't do this. Don't call and say, why can't I do this? Because you're not in Canary. First in gray, then in the usual yellow of Chrome Canary. Right-clicking this app's icon, you can choose New Window to start it up. This walks you through the usual onboarding experience you'll find on Chrome for Linux or Windows, which makes sense considering it's an entirely separate browser. Once the onboarding is done, you can now use this LaCrosse browser just as you would use Google Chrome on your Chromebook. Given this is a massive change and the fact that Google's Chrome team is currently working on an adjusted schedule, of course, because of COVID, it's too early to say when to expect LaCrosse to possibly arrive. If and when it does, though, it's clear that Chromebook owners will have less to fear when their device's expiration date arrives. So are you ready for that eternal Chromebook? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Or text us at our brand-new and super-hot text line, 585-205-8887.
That's 8887.
The number in Bayonne, 585-205-8887. The big thing to remember, oh, here we go. The big thing to remember about this is to know about this is basically Chromebooks have a lifetime after X
every
number of years.
Does.
Every computer does. But in terms of updates, Chromebooks have an end of life, an AUE, automatic update expiration, where they no longer get updates. On every new Chromebook, that is 8 years. Quite frankly, that's long enough for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But still, if you want to keep your Chromebook longer, you will become more and more vulnerable because there won't be updates. However, 99% of what people do on a Chromebook is done through the browser. So if they separate the browser from the operating system, then they can continue to update the browser.
Which is the safe.
Which keeps it safer. Right. Yeah. And the other thing most people use are, there are really four operating systems in a Chromebook nowadays. There's Chrome OS itself, there's Linux, there's Android, and soon there will be Windows. So you'll be able to run products from all of those operating systems. All of those products get updated, even if the operating system itself doesn't get updated. And the operating system itself is already protected in 100 million ways.
Yep.
So that's not a problem. It's the applications in it that are a problem. And the only real application in a Chromebook that isn't updated with, that is only updated with the operating system is the browser. So if they remove that, you'll be able to keep your Chromebook more than 8 years.
Yeah.
8 years. 8 years.
But the Chromebooks, I mean, mine's got to be over 8 years old, though.
Probably not. But yes, it could be.
No, I think it is. I got to check.
You got to check.
Well, because, like I say, I don't even think about it. You know, like you say, I just turn it on, and it'll let me know, oh, there was an update, you know, after I already started it up, and it just does its thing. I just don't think about it because...
Well, here's the
like
easy
I say,
way.
I'm pretty confident with the Chromebook that nothing's going to get into it anyways.
Right, but here's how you test. On a Chromebook, in the lower right corner is the time.
Yep.
Click on that, and you'll get a pop-up, and you'll click on the gear.
Yep, I know.
When you're on the gear, you click on About Chrome OS down on the right, and then under that, you click on Additional Details. And it'll tell you what channel you're on. Currently, I'm on stable. If you want to completely screw up your life,
go beta.
You can go to beta, or if you really want to screw up the screwed up life, you can go to developer.
Oh,
that is labeled as unstable.
Yeah.
And the second one down, the second set down on under additional details is update schedule. And on my machine, for instance, it says this device will get automatic software and security updates until June 2026.
I got to check mine.
So I'm in pretty dang good shape.
For a few more years.
For another 6 years.
That's a really, really handy feature because Microsoft and Apple don't publish that very well. It's listed on their knowledge bases. If you go look hard enough, you'll find it.
If you know how to look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so anybody can find out what the AUE of their system is. Mine is good until June of 2026, yeah. So I'm in good shape.
So yeah, they wind up just breaking that out and doing the browser. Cold.
So right, in 2027,
yeah.
Or after June of 2026, this machine no longer gets updates, but that's only the operating system.
And
the browser, which is where you get stuff through, will be updated. The apps, which you get stuff through, in fact, a bunch of my apps updated when I started this up today. In the background, I don't even care. All my Android apps updated, no problem. And Linux updates, and I could go update it myself if I really wanted to. But yeah, so you can do all of that and get yourself your updates and keep your machine running. But I would suggest that this is a very good thing in the long run. Obviously, we don't have it yet, but it's in the beta channel and things that get into the it's in Canary. This is Canary in a coal mine, right? The idea is that when you are using Canary, your machine will die.
Yep.
It will die. So I wouldn't go to beta or developer if you want to make sure your machine
just
still runs.
Wait. You know, wait it out. I mean, I don't worry too much about my Chromebook, like I say, because it is such a secure system. And not to create a falsehood or anything else, but not many developers bother with, you know, hackers and that try to bother with Chromebooks because they know, you know, there's no operating system that they can plant stuff in for the most part. And, you know, so it's not worth their time and effort right
now. For many years, there was a contest called Pwn to Own, PWN, the number 2 OWN. And what they did was they put up a Mac, a Windows machine, a Linux box, and a Chromebook. And you got all kinds of very valuable prizes, including, you know, $10,000 worth of computer equipment.
Yep, cash.
Depending on what you broke into. Macs fell easily. Windows fell easily. Linux fell by the third or fourth day. Chromebooks never fell. And so, you know, these are the top hackers in the world looking for prizes and an ego boo, and they didn't get into
it. This year they did it virtually, where the organizers put all the computers in a room, and then the hackers mailed their exploits in.
Yeah, right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. And hey, how about you? It is 30 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You That We Are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a couple of minutes.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, it's the final leg of this week's edition of Sound Bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And we have no one on the phone, and we have no text messages.
Yes, we did.
We did?
The iTunes one. The
iTunes. Oh, that's right. Hello. I thought, well, we were discussing it.
Yeah, we discussed it. It just wasn't on the air.
We solved it off the air. Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. I think we would be helpful if we do it on the air.
Yeah, let's do it on the air, too. Okay, you want to read the...
Yeah. It says, hi, an update. I just updated my iPhone to 14, and since then, iTunes on my Mac doesn't see my iPhone. Any thoughts?
Well, one of the things in general we would recommend is wait until the 14.01 patch to come out and let other people find these problems. I'm looking around for some of the problems that have been reported, and I don't see anything specific with iTunes Connect. One of the things that each new version of iTunes has done is, I'm sorry, not iTunes, of iOS, has sort of gotten away from the need for iTunes on the computer. That you can do all your syncing over Wi-Fi, you can do your syncing through iCloud. Doesn't say what Mac OS he's running, but the one thing that I would be concerned about is that iOS 14, along with all the OS upgrades, may have stuff to do with Mac OS 11 that's coming out. You're running an older, now you're running an old computer OS with a brand new phone OS. It should work, but I haven't heard any specific options. Yeah, I'm reading through some of the different fixes, and you don't use iTunes. Most of these fixes are from companies that sell other syncing software.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
should he try syncing with a cable rather than?
Well, that's how you sync with iTunes, with a cable.
Oh, you can't do it over Wi-Fi.
Well, yeah, once you have the cable connected, you can tell it to do Wi-Fi.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So, right, maybe so, now with the new...
Right, it depends on whether he's having trouble syncing over Wi-Fi or syncing with USB.
Right. If he's having trouble over Wi-Fi, he should sync with USB first.
Try that, yeah.
Yeah. That's all I got. I'm not a Mac guy.
Me neither.
And, you know, the typical troubleshooting is reboot both devices. And
all right, reboot both devices, try a different USB port if you are...
Different
connecting,
cable.
Try a different cable. The usual
if you
stuff.
Check the system profiler to see if the USB device is detected, that's sort of like the first step. If the computer itself isn't seeing it, then iTunes isn't going to see it.
Right.
And so that becomes then a different problem with the same solution.
Okay, can you turn off USB or even Wi-Fi connectivity to iTunes? And could it be that the update turn that off?
You can turn off Wi-Fi in general on the computer, but you can't turn off USB.
Well, and I'm talking... Oh, did he update... Wait. See, now I don't know. Did he update iTunes on the...
It doesn't say.
Oh, no. He updated iPhone to 14, and now iTunes doesn't see iPhone.
Yep.
Yeah.
At all.
There is an issue... When did they add it? I think somewhere in iOS 12 or maybe 13... When you plug your phone into a computer, the phone says, "Do you want to trust this computer?" And then the computer won't see it until you say yes. And they did that for the Blue Jack. What was the Power Hijack?
Oh yeah. People, I forget what it's called.
People
yeah.
put up fake power plugs right. in airports that was really a computer and suck all your data off. So when you plug your phone into a computer, it warns you it's a computer. You have to make sure you say yes if you want your computer to see it. So let me see how to reset that that question.
Right.
So maybe it's waiting for both the computer and the phone to trust the computer, and you have to unlock the phone in order to get that trust option come up.
Would he receive a message, though, on the screen that one of them is waiting for, you know, response to?
You should, yes.
You should, but only if the phone is unlocked.
Doesn't it have to be unlocked to get at it?
So, and typically you would unlock it to when you plug it in anyway. But
right,
just in case.
Just in case, make sure it's unlocked. You might see that message. If so, say yes, you trust it.
I know zip about my phone.
Right. The other thing is make sure you're signed into iTunes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you may need to sign into the iTunes store to be able to see the account information.
Right, with an update, it may have logged you out. After doing
that, might look for the credentials to relog in.
Another common problem with iTunes is it nags at you all the time to log back into the store.
Right. And if he didn't, then maybe it doesn't recognize him for that reason. But so make sure you're logged into the store. Make sure that you've said, your phone is unlocked when you connect in case there's a message.
On the iPhone, there is an option to reset your... location and privacy data, and that's how you get to bring that trust command to back up.
Oh, there you go. So if you accidentally, because people get click happy, he may have accidentally said no.
Yeah.
He or she, I don't know who that is.
Soundbite, your name.
So yeah, there's a, those are at least some of the things that you can do. This is one of the problems with trying to do this stuff over text. If we can't ask you questions, it means we either have to explain 50 or 60 different things, or we just stop after a few. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Hi, guys. Quick question. I have Windows 10 machines. I've got some HP printers that don't seem to have Windows 10 drivers. Is there any way of getting them?
Maybe.
I say Windows 10 usually has universal printers in it. One thing you can do is if you're not seeing, you know, in the list of printers, your printer there,
right?
I believe you scroll down a little bit and you say update list.
Yep, I did that.
And it goes out and it should find your printer.
Are these wireless printers? Or?
No, they're wired. They're pretty old.
That may be the problem. They may be too old. But you might be able to go to the manufacturer website. If you're lucky, there's a Windows 10 driver there. You could try the Windows 8 or Windows 7 driver to see if that works, but it may not.
But the update didn't find it for you?
No, it didn't.
Yeah, because I have an HP 4000, and I had the same issue. It didn't show up in Windows 10. I had to go down to the update, and I had to do the update a couple times. But then it found the 4000 because I have a 4000 TN. And, but it took a couple times, and finally it took a while for it to go out and think about it. But it did do it.
Okay, I'll try multiple, and then I'll try the Windows. Should I try 8 or 7, which would be?
7.
7, okay.
7 is more stable. 8 was almost as much as the other operating system.
Don't say it. We know your blood pressure is finally down a little.
Yes, it is. I'm
calm. It was a tablet OS they hosted on computers.
Yeah. All right, give that stuff a try, Ed.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Bye.
Or just buy a new printer.
Or just buy a new printer.
Yeah.
That's
almost what developers...
When a printer still works.
Yep.
Yeah,
just bought a lot of ink for this printer, and I don't want to have to buy a new printer.
Right.
Because, of course, the ink won't work in a new printer either.
Right, no, of course not.
We've got another text in, and it says, does installing Cloud Ready wipe the entire hard drive or just Windows? Thanks, Bert from Fairport. Or Brent from Fairport.
It will, by default, wipe the entire hard drive. So you should all, and anytime you upgrade or change your operating system, you really want to make sure you've got a very good
backup.
And that means not just have a backup, but test that backup. Make sure that those files are actually there and that you can read a few of them. Take a couple of random samples, particularly when you're doing something as invasive as replacing your operating system.
Theoretically, you can install it on a second partition on the same drive and have a dual boot.
Right, that's true.
That's trickier.
That's much trickier, and it is not the default.
Yeah.
So if you're one of those people who just clicks through, you're going to wipe out your hard drive.
Yep.
So, Brent, you probably are going to, if you're very careful and read every screen, and even before you set it up, go to the neverware.com and check the installation, read it over several times to see how to do the install so that you are ready when you actually do the install. For those of you who don't know what Cloud Ready is, it's basically a Chromebook. It turns any old machine, any even a new machine, into a Chromebook-ish device. It doesn't do everything a Chromebook does. There are some things, for example, Chromebooks are getting ready to run Windows. I don't know that will happen. Maybe with Wine, I suppose, maybe. But anyway, the point is it's very much like a Chromebook, and you could resurrect an old computer that can't run Windows anymore or runs other operating systems much more slowly. As long as you got enough RAM and oomph on the processor, which isn't much, but as long as you got enough, it should be fine.
We had a customer bring a computer in because it was running slow, and we're looking at it. It's only a dual core.
Yeah.
And they're running a the latest OS. Oh, and they don't have enough memory. Oh, and they're running multiple users simultaneously. Oh,
yeah, right. But if they were running something like Cloud Ready, it would be like a new computer. It would be fast.
Yep.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Pat from Batavia, New York. Hi, Pat. What's up?
Well, guys, I decided to follow your advice about checking when the computer expires. And guess what?
What?
Mine is June 2022.
Nice.
And I just bought it, I thought, like a year ago. Well, anyway, here's the part I wanted to make you aware of is the interesting update expiration suggestion. It says, this is on supportofgoogle.com. Each device has an auto update expiration, AUE. We encourage you to check the AUE dates of service before your purchase. Now, is that even feasible when you're buying it online?
Yes, because each device has a type. And Google has a page that tells you when the it's the auto update policy page at Google, and it's under Google Chrome Answers. Steve can, we've posted it several times, but you can post it again. And what it does is it talks about the Google approved devices, and it lists all of them by manufacturer, and then under manufacturer by the type. For example, mine is an Asus, Flip, C434T, I think it is.
So you have to know all the long part numbers of your computer
I bought an Acer Chromebook 15. Is that enough information?
No.
No, there's a serial number on the back that tells you more about it.
There'd be a deeper part number.
That's after you purchased it. Well, how do you get that before you purchase it?
There'd be a deeper part number you could look up.
Yeah, they generally, every place I've seen that sells them does provide the full part number. For example, when I bought mine, I bought it off of Amazon. It was a Chromebook Flip C434T. So I looked up Chromebook Flip C434T. I found one without the T, but it's the same date, June 2026.
Oh, okay, so it is possible. I thought it was something you had to look up once you had the computer.
No, you can look it up beforehand. Go ahead.
Say, when did they go to the 8-year?
Just recently.
So his might have been purchased before that, and it might have been a 3-year-old model that they're still selling as new.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about that.
Yeah, it could be.
Right.
The reason I got it cheaper is that it was an older model.
Yeah.
But it didn't occur to me at the time to think about that. So this change, I came in the middle of your discussion about the change and the separating the OS from the browser.
Yes.
That would help me if that
absolutely, that would help you, because although the operating system will no longer be updated, the browser would still be updated.
Yes.
So you get a lot of security, just not total security.
Right. And it won't turn into a brick. Windows ME type computer. Right.
Stop, Dave. Calm. Deep breaths. Calm.
There's a whole generation of people that don't know that OS.
That's exactly right.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like the first plague, right?
Before me and after me. If you were born before me,
right?
Then
right.
After me.
But yeah, so anybody can go look at it. And Steve is I think, has found it.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of gobbledygook in front of it. You have to scroll all the way down to the bottom to get to the, here's the computers you can look up.
Right.
And
but
that's on your soundbites.org website?
Yep, or? Soundbites.org, bites with a Y.
Francis would like us to know.
Okay, Steve's posting it right now, so it'll be up
take
in a
care.
Moment.
Yep.
Thank you. See you later.
Thank you, sir.
He's lucky I didn't do a dump on him.
Yeah, for saying the words.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the point here is that every device has an expiration date. Every one. Often you can update to a newer version of the operating system, but eventually you can't. Apple people see that with Macs quite regularly.
And partly is we don't know
Right.
And I want to think that Apple doesn't know yet.
You want to think that anyway.
For the Macs, hardware support is 5 years after the product is discontinued.
Right.
We don't know when it's going to be discontinued.
Right.
So you can run the latest OS on an 8-9-year-old computer.
It'll run horribly, but it'll run.
It'll run, yeah. Didn't think it would run well.
Yeah, right.
But we don't know when the next OS won't run on an old computer.
Right.
Is there some piece of the chip it doesn't work with?
Right. Every new Chromebook will be updatable for 8 years. But that's a new Chromebook, not a...
Yeah.
That's new models. Yep. That's not a Chromebook that's been sitting in a warehouse for a year that's now on sale, so you picked it up cheap. For that one, you're going to want to look all this up.
All right, we got another question in here. If I install Neverware, would any updates come from Google, from Cloud Ready or from Google?
They come from Cloud Ready, I believe.
Because it's a version of Chrome OS. It's not Google Chrome OS, right? It's Chromium, right. Not Chrome.
Right.
And in fact, the software updates work very similarly to the way they do on Chromebooks.
Easy,
but
for
they
you
come
to
out somewhere between 4 and 10 weeks later.
Yeah. So
because what happens is the update comes out, the Neverware people then have to make sure it's stable on their devices and yada yada yada, and then out it comes. So if you're running Cloud Ready, you will be anywhere between 4 and 10 weeks behind on the updates to Chromebooks, but you will get those updates.
Yeah. Hopefully it's not as bad as in the cell phone world where it can take years by the time Google releases an update before it gets to the handset maker, or gets to the carrier, or gets to everyone in the middle, if it finally gets to you.
And Google is working hard to change that.
Yeah.
They want system updates to come out immediately.
Yep. And part of the problem in the cell phone world is there's so many cell phone handset makers that are just selling you a box and they don't care.
Yeah.
And so those are the really cheap phones will probably never get updates.
Right. But if you're looking for a really nice way to resurrect an old computer, Neverware's Cloud Ready is a really terrific system to resurrect an old machine, essentially turn it into a Chromebook. I've got a couple old 2 gig, dual core old machines.
Yeah.
That wants 4 gig, but it'll run.
But not well.
Not well.
And you can't run anything else.
Right.
You want to open a word processor or web browser? No, we never said that. We said the OS would run.
Right. But in this case, the OS is the web browser. So
we had another quick question pop up in here. It says, if I get a new Chromebook, should I have to worry about Windows?
No. That's a simple answer. A Chromebook...
Maybe.
It
depends. Do you have to run Windows programs?
Yeah.
You'll be able to eventually.
Yeah.
But in general, Chromebook does not run Windows. It runs the Chrome OS. You will never have to update a Windows machine. You will never have to update any of that nonsense. You'll have your own nonsense to deal with. But as I said, Chromebooks update in the background. You just get a little notice that says, oh, there's an update available. Reboot. And when you do, and you don't have to, you can wait till tomorrow. And when you do reboot, it comes up with the new operating system. It takes a little longer to reboot after an operating system update. But after that, it boots up again in just 8 seconds. So you're ready to go. All right, that music tells us you wasted 2 hours of your life with this nonsense. We want to thank each and every one of you called in. We particularly want to thank those who texted in with enough information. We're done. We'll be back next week with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 55 minutes after the hour, so we are done with this week's edition of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you, because it is you people who make sure that we are, as we always say, member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours.